April 1865 brought the Civil War's end and the beginning of two extraordinary American stories. In a Virginia slave cabin, a boy named simply Booker slept on rags, forbidden even to learn his letters. In Manhattan, young Theodore Roosevelt watched Abraham Lincoln's funeral procession from a privileged perch. Nothing suggested these lives would ever intersect, yet their unlikely partnership would challenge America's deepest racial divisions. One would rise from slavery to become his race's most influential voice. The other would overcome debilitating illness to reach the presidency. Together, they would attempt something unprecedented, genuine collaboration across the color line in an era of hardening segregation. Their friendship wouldn't solve America's racial crisis, but it would prove that courage and conviction could bridge chasms most considered unbridgeable. Freedom arrived for 9-year-old Booker when Union soldiers read the Emancipation Proclamation at his Virginia plantation, but liberation brought harsh realities. His family trekked nearly 200 miles to West Virginia, where young Booker worked brutal pre-dawn shifts at salt furnaces and descended into dangerous coal mines. Yet amid this hardship, something awakened. When he learned to recognize the number 18 on salt barrels, an insatiable hunger for education ignited within him. His breakthrough came through Viola Ruffner, a former Vermont school teacher who demanded absolute cleanliness, punctuality, and honesty. Meeting her exacting standards, Booker gained access to books and tutoring that transformed his rough plantation dialect into articulate speech. By 16, he possessed a singular goal, attending Hampton Institute 400 miles away. With just $12, he set off on foot. When money ran out in Richmond, he slept under boardwalks and unloaded ships to continue his journey. At Hampton, he thrived under practical education, emphasizing industrious habits over classical learning, developing the philosophy that would define his life's work, advancement through demonstrated competence and economic self-sufficiency. Born into New York privilege in 1858, young T.D. Roosevelt suffered debilitating asthma that confined him to home education. At 14, his father challenged him, "You have the mind, but you have not the body." The boy's response was characteristically determined, "I'll make my body." He embarked on rigorous weightlifting, wrestling, and boxing, a regimen he'd maintain for life, transforming weakness into his famous strenuous life philosophy. His mother grew up on a Georgia plantation, and while young Theodore prayed for Union victory, his uncles fought for the Confederacy. This divided heritage gave him unique perspective on America's regional wounds. When his beloved father died during Roosevelt's Harvard years, the devastated 20-year-old vowed to lead a life worthy of his memory. Then tragedy struck. Both his mother and wife died on the same day in February 1884. His diary entry was stark: "The light has gone out of my life." Fleeing grief, he retreated to Dakota Territory, where ranch life transformed him. He participated in cattle roundups and once shot a 9-foot grizzly from 25 feet away, earning respect from skeptical cowboys and broadening his understanding of American life beyond Eastern privilege. In 1881, Booker Washington arrived in Tuskegee, Alabama, to find his new school existed only on paper, a legislative bill allocating $2,000 for teacher salaries, but nothing more. He purchased a 100-acre abandoned plantation for $500, ensuring the deed went to the school's trustees rather than himself. He established a revolutionary labor basis curriculum, where students studied academics half the day, then worked improving the property. Leading by example, axe on shoulder, he cleared 20 acres for cotton planting and expanded programs to include brickmaking, carpentry, printing, blacksmithing, housekeeping, and sewing. By 1895, enrollment approached 800 students across 20 buildings on 1,810 acres. Yet this progress occurred as Democrats regained Southern power and Jim Crow laws replaced Reconstruction-era gains. Washington witnessed the lynching of Jack Turner, a prosperous black farmer executed on fabricated charges, a brutal reminder that success itself could prove fatal for black Americans. Washington learned to advance Tuskegee's interests without provoking hostile white neighbors, while securing support from northern donors. This delicate navigation between accommodation and advancement would define his controversial legacy and shape his approach to the partnership that lay ahead. Roosevelt's reform credentials were forged in New York's tenement sweatshops, where families labored 18 hours daily in squalid conditions. As civil service and police commissioner, he fought corruption through surprise night inspections. His national profile exploded during the Spanish-American War when he resigned as Assistant Secretary of the Navy to lead the Rough Riders, a diverse force of Harvard men, cowboys, and Native Americans. At San Juan Heights on July 1, 1898, Roosevelt charged ahead as the only mounted man, bullets nicking his elbow in what became his defining, crowded hour. In 1895, Washington became the first African American addressing a racially mixed Southern audience at Atlanta's Cotton States Exposition. When applause turned to sudden chill at his appearance, he shared a ship parable about finding fresh water by casting down your bucket where you are. His climactic gesture, fingers spread overhead, declared, "In all things that are purely social, we can be as separate as the fingers, yet one as the hand in all things essential to mutual progress." This compromise accepted segregation while requesting economic opportunity. Yet W.E.B. Du Bois, initially supportive, became Washington's chief critic, advocating immediate political rights over patient gradualism, a divide reflecting fundamentally different life experiences. When Theodore Roosevelt became president at 42 after McKinley's assassination in 1901, he sought Washington's counsel on Southern appointments and casually invited him to dinner on October 16, 1901. Neither anticipated the firestorm. Before Washington reached New York the next morning, Southern newspapers erupted. The Nashville American called it a breach of good taste, while Senator Pitchfork Ben Tillman warned it would necessitate killing 1,000 ends in the South before they will learn their place again. Roosevelt became the South's most despised president since Lincoln. Despite the backlash, Roosevelt initially kept his promises. He nominated Dr. William Crum, a Howard Medical graduate, as Charleston customs collector, refusing to withdraw despite race-based opposition. When postmistress Minnie Cox faced Mississippi threats, he closed the entire Indianola post office rather than accept her forced resignation. Yet these battles exacted a price. The partnership's limits showed starkly in 1906, when Roosevelt dishonorably discharged 167 black soldiers over the Brownsville affair, despite inconclusive evidence and Washington's personal plea. Though Washington avoided public criticism, the incident effectively ended their productive collaboration. Both men died young. Washington at 59 in 1915, Roosevelt at 60 in 1919. Despite vastly different backgrounds, they shared remarkable parallels. Ambitious from childhood, widowed young, emerging as national leaders, worshiping Lincoln, and confronting American racism in their own ways. Roosevelt initiated their relationship partly for political reasons, but also from genuine desire to do right. Washington saw in Roosevelt a pathway to change, using their connection to place talented black people in positions of authority. Their victories remained limited by their era's constraints. Roosevelt's equality beliefs were bounded by Darwinist views on racial evolution. The White House dinner, which Roosevelt later admitted was a mistake, colored every subsequent racial decision of his presidency, possibly influencing his infamous Brownsville decision. Washington's accommodationist approach drew increasing criticism from Du Bois and others demanding immediate equality. Yet, despite their imperfections, Roosevelt and Washington were men of genuine virtue who worked together to advance Lincoln's vision of a more perfect union. Their unlikely friendship teaches us that progress requires both courage to bridge divides and humility to recognize our limitations. That meaningful change often comes through imperfect partnerships rather than perfect ideologies. Roosevelt and Washington couldn't solve America's racial crisis, but they proved that trying, together, across seemingly unbridgeable divides was itself an act of profound significance.